20. July 1st. After supper in the cave. Mr. Loomis does plan to use Pharaoh to catch me. Yesterday, late in the afternoon, he came outside carrying a plate of food. The dog had stopped crying and gone to sleep, curled up in the grass beside the porch. Mr. Loomis did not give him the food immediately, but put the plate down on the porch. He untied the leash, the electric cord, from the porch, looped up most of it in his hand like a lasso, it was 25 feet long, and led Pharaoh out to the road. Pharaoh, not used to being led, had a hard time at first. He kept trying to run, and each time was brought up short. He learned quickly, however, and in a few minutes was walking along docilely enough, his nose to the road. He was following my trail again, but this time leading Mr. Loomis behind him. They went only a few yards up the road together, perhaps 50, then they turned and went back to the house, Mr. Loomis once again limping slightly. But in that few yards, I began to see even more clearly the mistake I had made, and also why Mr. Loomis had tied Pharaoh up. If he could teach him to track on a leash, he could find me whenever he wanted to. Not yet, perhaps, but when he could walk farther. Suddenly, I had a feeling he knew I was watching. Or worse, that he hoped I was. I felt slightly sick. I was in a game of move-counter-move, like a chess game, a game I did not want to be in at all. Only Mr. Loomis wanted to be in it, and only he could win it. After he had tied the dog up and fed him, Mr. Loomis walked back to the road and stood looking in the direction they had walked, toward the store. Having seen nothing there, he turned slowly in a full circle, inspecting all of the valley that he could see. At one point, he stared straight at me, and I had a fearful impulse to put down the binoculars and duck into the cave. But he could not see me, I knew. In a moment, his gaze went on past. He completed his circle and went into the house. I took stock of what I had in the cave. A few pounds of cornmeal in a paper bag, some salt, 3 cans of meat, 3 of beans, 1 of peas, 2 of corn. That was all the food. Not very much. I had the 2 guns and a box of shells for each. A sleeping bag, a pillow, and 2 blankets, but no change of clothes except for the extra shirt I had brought from the store. The rest I had taken back to the house. A pot, a frying pan, a plate, a cup, a knife, fork, and spoon, 2 candles, a lamp, and a gallon of kerosene. 1 book. Famous short stories of England and America, which we had used as a textbook in high school English, and 3 bottles of water, former cider jugs, holding 1 gallon each. However, the water had been in the cave for weeks and might be stale. After dark, I would pour it out and refill the bottles at the brook. The sun was going down, and I decided before it was fully dark, I must see about making the fire. What I had in mind was to build, if I could, a wall of some kind near the cave. Not very big, but enough to hide the glow of a small fire from the direction of the house. It turned out to be quite easy. I found a more or less flat place, a shelf, on the hillside a few yards up. I dug into it with a stick, raking the loosened earth with my hands into a low pile on the downhill side. The resulting hole was about 6 inches deep, about the size of a wash basin. Big enough for a cooking fire. The pile of earth was too low to hide all the flames, so until dark I collected rocks, about brick-sized, for my wall. When I had enough, or nearly, I found I could no longer see well enough to fit them properly, so I decided to finish the next day by daylight and ate cold beans for supper. After I had eaten, I carried 2 of my bottles to the brook and refilled them with fresh water. I also rinsed my spoon and washed my hands and face. I felt very tired in spite of my nap. I was yawning continuously and realized there would be no staying awake that night. That alarmed me somewhat, because sound asleep at night, I was vulnerable. I decided as a precaution not to sleep in the cave. With its 1 entrance and that a small one, it would be like a trap. I took my sleeping bag and a blanket up to the shelf where I had been building the firewall. There was just room enough on the other side of the hole to stretch out. The ground was lumpy, but it made no difference. I fell asleep instantly and did not wake up until the sunlight reached my eyes this morning. I got up, washed, ate the rest of last night's beans, took my bedding back to the cave, and set out for the house. I went the long way around, of course, by the pond and the store, so that I could approach along the road as I had left. I did not want him to have any idea where I was staying. Approaching the house, I saw no sign of life or motion. The tent stood in the yard, and the wagon trunk beside it sealed in its green cover. Where was Pharaoh? I thought he would be tied outside, but he was not. When I came up to the front yard, I stopped, staying in the road, and waited. I planned to go no closer than that. I did not have long to wait. In only a minute, the door opened, and Mr. Loomis stepped out onto the porch. He had seen me from inside. He came down the steps and stopped at the bottom. "I thought you would come back," he said. Then he added, "I hoped you would." For a moment I was stunned and could not think what to say. He was sorry and wanted to be friends again, yet I could not forget the horror of that night, and I knew that I would never trust him again. "No," I said, "I am not coming back, not any more, but I thought we should talk."
"Not come back?" he said. "But why not? Where will you stay?"
It was as before, the time he had held my hand and I had struck him. He acted as if nothing had happened, or as if he had forgotten it. For a moment I thought maybe, somehow, he did forget the things he had done. But I knew it was not true. He had not forgotten. He was rather pretending that it had not happened. I said, "I will find some place to stay."
"But where? This is your house."
"I would rather not discuss it."
He shrugged, very unconcerned.
"All right. Then why did you come?"
"Because, although I can't stay here anymore, I need to stay alive, and so do you."
"True," he said. "I intend to stay alive."
He was looking at me curiously, thinking as he talked, and not necessarily saying what he was thinking. "If we are to stay alive," I said, "there is work that has to be done. There are the crops and the seeds, the garden, the animals."
He said, "Of course, that's why I thought you would come back."
"I'm willing to do those things if I am left alone. I will also bring food and water as you need them. You will have to cook for yourself. There's a cookbook on the kitchen shelf."
"And you will go away at night."
"Where?"
"To another part of the valley." He was thinking all the time. He glanced down the road in the direction of the store. Finally, he said,
"I have no choice. I can only hope you will change your mind."
He paused.
"And act more like an adult and less like a schoolgirl."
"I will not change my mind." He said no more, but turned and went back into the house, closing the door behind him. I went to the barn, trying as I went to guess what he was thinking. He would be making plans, and from our conversation, he had learned some things he had not known and needed to know. That I was not going to move back to the house. That I was going to do the work. That I was going to bring him food and water.
So he would plan on that basis.
But plan what? It is possible that he will just accept what I have offered and leave me alone. But I do not believe that.
He was too curious about where I am staying. And he has tied up Pharaoh.
Where was Pharaoh when we talked? There was no sight nor sound of him. He must have had him tied up inside the house. Does he think, then, that I might try to untie him, to steal him, as Edward stole the suit? As I remembered that I did, in fact, think of doing that, I had a really sickening thought. I realized that whatever Mr. Loomis was planning, at the end of the plan was a picture. And it was of me, too, tied up like Pharaoh in the house. I put the idea out of my mind and milked the cow. She was going dry, there was no doubting that. The calf was almost fully weaned, and I had missed several milkings in a row, which had helped to speed the process up. Though I was careful to get the last drop, she gave only about half a gallon. There were assorted milk pails hanging on the barn wall. I poured the milk into two of these, dividing it evenly, and put one of them on the back porch for Mr. Loomis. I fed the chickens, gathered the eggs, and divided them, too, for a piece. From the garden I got peas, lettuce, and spinach, took half, and set the rest on the porch. Finally, I got a burlap feed sack from the barn to put my stuff in, though it barely filled one corner. In short, I did my morning outdoor work about as usual, and he left me alone, not even coming out onto the back porch. I did have a feeling he was watching me through the kitchen window, though I caught no glimpse of his face. About noon, I went to the store to get him a load of groceries. I ate lunch there from a can on the shelf, opening it with one of the can openers Mr. Klein had sold for 49 cents. When I carried the groceries back and left them on the porch, there was smoke coming from the chimney, and the milk, eggs, and vegetables were gone. He was cooking lunch. I made a mental note of two things. If I was going to continue to bring groceries, he would have to let me know what he needed. If I was going to bring water, he would have to set one of the water cans out when it got empty. At 4 o'clock, having run the cultivator between the rows of corn and beans, I quit and walked back to the store, thinking as I went that for one day at least the system had worked. It was unnatural and uneasy, but if it worked again tomorrow, the next day, and the day after that, perhaps I would become less afraid. So my hopes were lifted a little. I also thought that if I could get the wall finished, I could build a fire after dark and cook a hot meal. I was quite hungry. I stopped at the store to replenish my food supply. Since I had my burlap feed sack already with me, I used it as a container, removing the 4 eggs first. I gathered a dozen cans of assorted meats, vegetables, and soup, and a bag of flour. I put the eggs in a brown paper bag and added them on top. With the garden stuff I already had, that was about all I could carry, since I had to keep one hand free for the milk can. I decided to take a few more items each day, gradually building up my supply. I deposited my foodstuffs at the cave and hurried on, while it was still light, to finish my firewall. The more I looked at the site I had chosen, the better I liked it. For one thing, there were plenty of bushes and quite a few trees between it and the house. In fact, I could not see the house at all from there, so I was quite sure that with a little care I could keep the fire quite invisible. I added more rocks, chinking them with dirt and moss. In about half an hour, I had a respectable-looking small fireplace, its back about 18 inches high on the downhill side. Since my fire would be built in a 6-inch hole, flames under 2 feet would not show. That seemed enough. I gathered some dry sticks for firewood. While waiting for darkness, I looked down on the house. Mr. Loomis had come out again with Pharaoh on the leash and was walking with him, this time not down the road as before, but out behind the house. At first, I did not understand just what his object was, but as I watched, it slowly became clear. When they had walked before on the road, Pharaoh obviously tracking, Mr. Loomis had guessed he was following me. Now, he was making sure. I got out the binoculars to see better. As soon as they got behind the house, Pharaoh put his nose to the ground and led the way to the garden, where I had been, then to the barn, where I had also been. Pharaoh, in other words, knows what is expected, and Mr. Loomis, having watched from the window all day, knows that he knows. Finally, Pharaoh led him to the last place I had been before leaving, the barn where I had put the tractor away after cultivating. Here, Mr. Loomis stopped. He opened the door, looked in, and then, seemingly as an afterthought, looped Pharaoh's leash around the door handle. He disappeared into the barn. He was out of my sight, but it quickly became apparent what he was doing. After perhaps 5 minutes, I heard the churning metallic sound of the starter and the sputtering of the engine, muffled because it was inside the barn. A minute later, it grew louder, and the rear wheels of the tractor appeared, moving cautiously as he backed it out. He had, as far as I knew, never driven a tractor before, hence the 5 minutes. That was what it would take to figure it out for anyone who knew how to drive a car. The clutch, gas, and brake pedals were the same, the gear shift similar, 2 speeds forward and 1 reverse, plainly marked 1, 2, and R. Even the ignition key and steering wheel were the same. Mr. Loomis backed the tractor all the way out of the barn, shifted into forward, and drove it in a small circle in the barn lot. He shifted into neutral and raced the motor a little, as if to hear how it sounded. In forward again, he drove it back into the barn and turned it off. He untied Pharaoh from the door, the dog picked up my track again, and started to lead the way toward the store. But Mr. Loomis, already knowing I had gone that way, led him back to the house. It was growing dark. A few minutes later, I saw a light come on in the kitchen window. If he was cooking, there must be smoke coming from the chimney. In the dusk, it did not show, and I thought if I could not see his, he could not see mine. I had laid my fire. Now I lit it, got it going, small but enough to cook over, and crept carefully through the bushes halfway down the hill toward the house. There, I waited until the dusk had turned to full darkness, looking alternately at the house to see if he came out to look, and up the hill toward my fire. The wall was successful. There was no trace at all of flame or glow. The only danger might be an occasional spark. I would have to be careful about that. I went back up the hill, and in a few minutes was cooking myself a dinner of canned ham, cornmeal cakes, peas, and scrambled eggs. I was extremely hungry. After I had eaten, I felt tired, and, though I should have gone to the stream to wash my dishes, I began to write in this journal. I wish now Mr. Loomis had never come to the valley at all. It was lonely with no one here, but it was better than this. I do not wish him dead, but I wish that by luck, by chance, he might have taken some other road and found some other valley. And I wonder, could there be others? Walking here from his laboratory, he came south. He went no farther than this. Could it be that somewhere beyond there are more valleys like this, other places that have been spared? Perhaps bigger than this, with 2, 3, or 6 people still alive, or maybe no people at all. If Mr. Loomis had taken another road, he might have found one of them. It is possible. My parents explored only a small area. There might be, for all I know, another valley only a few miles away, or even several. They would all be isolated from each other, each thinking it was alone. When Pharaoh returned that day, I was astonished and puzzled about where he had been. Could he have been living in another valley? Could he have run to it from this one and then run back? There is no way of knowing. I do not even know which direction he came from when he returned.